dbkmediaservices.com. You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SBCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. Now, here are your hosts for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk, Shane Combs and Matt Combs.
Hello, SVC fans. This is Shane Combs of SVCSportsZone.com, and I'd like to welcome you to Show 5 of Season 2 here on the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk Podcast Show. And really want to encourage the fans, if you haven't been out to the Triple Crown location back by Hampton Inn & Suites just off Bridge Street there in Chillicothe, really encourage you to do that. Great environment for the family. I know in talking to ownership, they have so many different ideas for the growth of that facility. Really a facility as sports people and as just people enjoy taking their family for some fun. Just something you definitely want to check out. Don't want to waste any time this week. I really feel like this could be one of the best shows we've ever had. Now, the inbox, admin one at svcsportszone.com, Facebook, which is svcsportszone.com, or you can be my friend. I'm Shane Combs, SVC Sports Zone. And then Twitter, we also have a SVC Sports Zone account there. So many different ways to get involved, and so many fans have done that. So I want to get right to it. And joined in the fall, as I always am, by my brother Matt. And Matt, as I welcome you to the show this week, I wanted to get right into the inbox. I know last week we talked about rivalries, and you had given a nice description on what you thought made up a rivalry. One of our inbox emails this week said, I heard you guys talking about rivalries last week. I think Uniota-Dena girls basketball has become a good one over the last decade. It always produces a great atmosphere. It has had balance that you mentioned in terms of both teams winning some. I also think those two teams will decide the league again this year. Yeah, I got to researching a little bit, and I look at Coach Jaron Cox at Adina, you know, returning Jenny Grigsby and some other nice pieces, and then Coach Jeff Miller, who I know you know well, Matt, from coaching with you, returns Rutherford and Cox and Overly, and such a long list of athletes. And the email's definitely right. You look at the last six championships, Adina in 07, Uniota, I believe, won four in a row, and then Adina wins last year. And those games definitely do always produce some great atmosphere and some great tradition. This email talks just about the last 10 years. Really, you go back into the 90s. I know Adina, I don't believe, won a championship in the 90s. They might have shared one in 90, but I know they won a state title in that decade. And then obviously Uniota has been in the title chase several times. So Matt, as you come into the show and you listen to that email, I just wondered what you thought of that particular rivalry in terms of the tradition, the competition that it always provides us, and the atmosphere, and maybe just some other rivalries that have come to mind here in the last week as we've gotten some feedback.
Well, yeah, I think this email is right on. I mean, Uniota-Dena and girls basketball, I think, could definitely be considered a rivalry because it goes way back, you know, obviously into the times where Cindy Driggs first coached at Uniota during her first stint. Coach Lee Snyder had some great teams at Adina, including a state championship team. And you know, those teams battled it out back then, too, in the mid-90s, mid to late-90s. So, yeah, I mean, both those schools have been blessed with a lot of great female athletes over the years, you know. So I think that's definitely a rivalry. And I think it goes to show you, when we talked about some of the things that make a rivalry, whether it be tradition or you know, geography in terms of schools being closely related to each other from a distance standpoint, the SVC lends itself to rivalries. What I mean by that is you've got a lot of schools that are close together in terms of distance. Anybody that goes to SVC sporting events knows how great the crowds are, especially when two really good teams get together.
Right.
So, you know, it's a league where, I mean, I don't think people around here maybe appreciate that, or they might take it for granted a little bit. You know, when we play in a league, for instance, where I coach, where there's five or six counties involved in that league, you don't get some of the same type of rivalries night in, night out.
Sure.
Where when you have schools that are 10, 15 minutes apart, like many schools in our area are, you tend to get those. So, yeah, I thought the emailer's right on. Definitely Union Adena girls would be a good one, and there's many others, and I think it's due to the way the league's set up.
Well, Matt, the email continued on. It was kind of a long email. It's kind of a two-parter. The next paragraph went on to introduce a new topic that I've had a lot of fun with. It says, another great topic for the show would be pet peeves in sports. I was doing this with a friend the other day, and some of the ones we came up with were funny. What bothers you the most in all sports? Like I said, I can't remember in the 5 years we've done the website and getting all these different emails and different things, I can't remember a time I've had more fun or spent more time or almost just spent time laughing to myself and just some of the things that I've been able to come up with. And throughout the week, going to different games and looking at stats, and as I read different articles, this particular email would come to my mind. And I guess I got to thinking about one the other night in volleyball. And first, let me say volleyball is a great game. I mean, for me, obviously, I coach baseball, I've coached basketball. Those are two of my loves. But outside of that, to watch a good volleyball game is as good a high school sporting event as I can go to. So please understand, I love the game. But in an attempt to make a great game even better, one of my pet peeves is the player introductions in volleyball. This really bothers me. I really need to get it off my chest, and maybe if enough people are with me out there, we can get this changed. If you've never been to a volleyball game or seen the player introduction, what happens is, and I think I have this right, when the other team is being introduced, if you're not rooting for that team, you're supposed to give like the courtesy one clap, and then if your team is being announced, you give two claps. And some people nowadays even dare to add a third clap in. And sometimes I get a little confused. Like if I'm there just as a, you know, unbiased just observer, I don't know how many times to clap. Like, you know, who am I rooting for? Do I clap once, twice, round of applause, one? And I don't get this. I mean, in all the great atmospheres you think of, if you think the way like a student section would react to an introduction in basketball or other sports, I just never get this. And you know, a lot of people throw out, well, it's the sportsmanlike thing to do, and I can't buy that either, because what I think, like sportsmanship, I mean, volleyball is a sport where when you score, your team comes together in a circle and does a predetermined like chant that oftentimes is like taunting the other team. You know, you'll get the ACE ace or whatever. Then you'll see some teams, and you know, I guess this is unlike any other sport. You know, like
can you imagine that happening in football, Shane? Like after a touchdown? I mean, yeah. In all honesty, I mean that'd be a flag.
Well, you're a basketball coach. Let me paint this picture for you. What if a guy drives down the middle, has a real nice and one, and all five of your players come together in a circle and do a chant, and then like the guys on the bench repeat it? Yeah, I mean, your reaction to that wouldn't be very good, I'm assuming.
Well, no, especially after the technical comes out, I'd say, for doing it. But no, it's different. It's always been the way it is. It's funny because, you know, the OHSAA stresses sportsmanship and everything, and it makes you wonder sometimes, you know, how that's allowed in that sport and not the others. I know we're probably going to get some volleyball people screaming at us when they listen to this, but it's like you say, I love volleyball. I love watching a good volleyball, you know, as much as anybody. We had two cousins that played for state championships, and not in this league, but another league. And we used to always go to their games, and we both love going, but that's always something that's kind of made me chuckle a little bit.
Well, I guess I got going down the list here. Like I said, I've had a lot of fun with this email this week, talking to friends and different things. I'd say one of mine in football, I can't hardly handle it when I see a quarterback wearing a number bigger than 19. When I see the Doug Flutie commercial, I can't hardly watch it. Baseball, a left-handed second baseman, that bothers me a little bit. Soccer, any sport that has a tie. Just the other night, I'm typing on the website, and I see Zane Trace and Wheelersburg play to a 1-1 tie. I mean, what's that? You know what I mean? Like, have a form of, like, an exciting shootout or something like that where you can determine a winner. I think that just adds some excitement to the sport. So, you know, fans, we want to hear from you. And, again, that's admin1@svcsportzone.com or through Facebook or Twitter. Love to hear some of yours, and we'll revisit these just like we do all of our topics. But, you know, Matt, before we did move on, I wanted to ask you, is there any different ones that maybe come to mind that you would want to add into that?
Well, you know, as I sit here and think about it, I know I'm probably forgetting some that after the show I'll be like, oh, man, I wish I'd have said that one. But I think with me, you know, in football, for instance, or really in all sports, in high school, they've made a, such an attempt to take some of the physicality out of the game. You know, like, well, in football, for instance, they've done that at every level. And my point is, I think that needed to be done probably in that sport to an extent because you run the risk of major, major injury.
Right.
But I think there's some other sports. I used to watch soccer all the time in high school because I had some good friends of mine that played soccer. And it was much more physical in the early 90s than it is, at least the last time I watched it, which was a few years ago, you know. You it seems like now anytime there's any sort of anything going on, you know what I mean, play is stopped. And it used to be play was allowed to go on a little bit. And I think in basketball, too, it bothers me because, you know, if it's – yeah, you've got to take out things that can hurt players, you know. Like, for instance, in football, obviously there's all kinds of things you have to do to prevent head injuries, things like this.
Sure.
In baseball, you can't let the guy run over the catcher at the high school level. I mean, we just saw Buster Posey have a season-ending leg injury a couple years ago in the major leagues because he got ran over. I mean, even though major leagues talking about not allowing that as much, you know. So you don't want to see that, like in baseball, see a catcher get injured due to a collision. So those things I understand. But like in basketball, they've changed, and I guess this can be a pet peeve of mine. The OHSAA, and they'll tell you it's the National Federation which does the rules, but whoever's, you know, to blame here, they've changed the free throw shooting rules about 5 times in the last 15 years.
That's a really good one. Very annoying.
Yeah. You know, and you don't even know. Here's the funny thing. It's different at every level. Because like in college, you go in on the release as soon as the shooter lets it go. In high school, you've got to wait till it hits the rim, which I think is the silliest rule ever. You know, officials, I would imagine they hate that rule, I would think, because how in the world can an official watch the ball hit the rim and watch for feet going into the lane? You know what I mean? Right. I mean, you can't see both of those things.
You could argue that it makes it more physical.
Well, yeah, it does, because – kids cheat on it. I mean, they get an early start. So then what do you tell your kid to do? Hey, if he cheats and go, you go too. Because if the official doesn't see it, he's going to get the rebound. So you got to go with him. I mean, if he goes, you go. So, yeah, I mean, it does. And I mean, and then when you play it different, I can remember playing in an adult rec league last year. And we're shooting free throws, 30-some-year-old men. Hey, ref, are we going on the release or when it hits the rim? You know, I mean, it's like we don't even know what to do because what rules are we playing? So that's been a big pet peeve of mine, is in an attempt to make the game safer, you just get ridiculous with it, okay? The other thing in basketball, this is more of a professional thing, it just kills me to watch NBA basketball, and every time there's a foul, the guy that fouled just looks shocked. You know what I mean? I mean, he looks like, you know what I mean? He looks like he just saw a car wreck. That's just, he's just wide eyed. Like, oh my goodness. Are you serious? You know, every time. I mean, how many, when's the last time in the NBA you saw a guy raise his hand? Yep. My God.
Raise his hand like, yeah.
Good call, sir. You know, it doesn't happen. I mean, every time they argue it. So that's kind of a pet peeve of mine too. So I mean, some of the ones you had were good. Like I said, I'm sure there's going to be others. I know in golf, I know people, purists are like, golf's a gentleman's sport and blah blah. You know, it's still a competitive situation. Guys get upset, but sure enough, a guy gets upset and just kind of slams his club down on the PGA. Tiger's gotten blamed for this a ton of times, obviously. You know, and there's a big deal about it. You know, it's not like, I mean, if you helicopter your club down the fairway, yeah, that's an issue. You know, you slam your club a little bit, kick a tee, you know, it's no big deal. It's a sport. You get a little upset. It happens. So, yeah, I mean, it's fun to talk about these things because I think as you watch sports, you're probably constantly coming up with another one that bothers you. I know my wife hates end zone celebrations. She thinks anytime a guy celebrates in the end zone, she's like, oh, you know, I wish he wouldn't do that. So everybody has their own opinion, but it's a fun topic.
Well, you mentioned golf. We had someone talked to us a little bit earlier this week when this topic had come up in some conversation about a pet peeve in golf. But as we move to golf, I think it would be crazy for us not to first congratulate the Uniota Shermans, Coach Dan Drummond, as well as Player of the Year Colton Forkham, as Uniota wins gold again. You can get all of those scores on the website from their match number 6 win at JC's, and then their 7 and 8 sweep on the front and back nine at Pickaway Country Club. And you can go on the website and you can see the all-league team. Again, that's a little unofficial until the coaches are able to verify all the scores with the league. Anyone who's ever been a part of the league in terms of a player or coach knows the end of a round can be kind of crazy with kids finishing on several different holes and cards getting signed. It's very easy to get the wrong score in the wrong box sometimes. And so we always assure fans that we've been pretty good, pretty official in terms of keeping it the correct way on the website, but we always try to assure them that that's not official until the league releases it. But again, you can go on the golf page, look down at the bottom of the page there, and you'll see the all league. And Matt, before we get into the pet peeve of golf that we're going to talk about, what are some of your thoughts on the golf regular season and maybe even a peek ahead of the postseason? I know I can tell fans that I just received before we've come on the air this week that the Westfall girls have won the sectional with Post and Stewart shooting 78-79 to lead the Lady Mustangs. So they're heading back to the district. But when you look at the guys there, I know you spend a lot of time with that. What's some of the things that jump out about SVC golf here at the end of the regular season?
Well, I think the regular season went the way we thought it would in terms of who won the league. I don't think, you know, very many people had much doubt about that. When you get into postseason, and yeah, obviously you have to look at Uniota as a team that might be able to advance. When they get it all going, they have a pretty good four guys there on any given night, you know. So, and then individually, you have some guys from some other teams. You know, when you get into the sectional, people have to remember when the best couple teams advance, or however many teams it is, it might even be, what, four teams out of the sectional advance? Is that how it works, Shane? It
varies on how many they okay. have in there, yeah.
And those teams, when they advance, those players automatically go with the team, obviously, so their scores don't count in the individuals that advance. So in other words, if a guy shoots a 73 on the winning team, that 73 doesn't count on the individuals advancing. So they'll still take the top couple individuals that aren't on one of the qualifying teams. So it gets interesting. There may be some individuals in the SVC, even though their team wasn't great during, you know, in terms of league standings, they may still get an opportunity to move on to the district. So it's always an exciting time for golfers.
Sure, I think you look at the top four or five on that list that I'm talking about, and I think that could definitely be the case. I know Shania Irvin also is going on from Huntington. She played with the boys all year long in the league, where in the postseason she moves over to the girls, and as an individual she's moving on to the district as well. I believe her score was 78. I haven't had a chance to really break those down yet. That was coming into me right before we went on the air. So, again,
it's congratulations. It's important that people notice, too, not to interrupt you, Shane, that you're not allowed to play in two tournaments. So in her case, she's not just abandoning the boys' team. It's if she plays in the boys' tournament, she can't play in the girls' tournament. So, obviously, it makes sense for her to play in the girls' tournaments where she may advance a long way.
Sure, absolutely. So going back to the pet peeve thing, I had someone earlier this week talk to me. We're talking about some of the SVC course layouts, and they had heard the two of us, Matt, talking about how we would rank the courses, and they were giving some of their opinions to me. And they mentioned some of the courses deciding to play the blue tees and playing the ball down. And his argument was, even in some of the fairways at some of the courses around here, it's a little unfair in terms of some of the conditions of the course. And, you know, you may not see that show up with a Colton Forkham or an Eli McKee or some of the elite players in the league, but he just really felt like it almost would become unfair at times in some of the setups that the courses were using. Well, Matt, I know you play a lot of golf. You get around to a lot of different courses. I just wondered what your thought was on this particular pet peeve of the way the courses are set up sometimes in the SVC.
Well, I think it's awful hard. It is awful hard to ask kids to play the ball down in the rough with the conditions that these courses get in, especially when you have weather like we've had this summer. I mean, everybody knows it hasn't rained much. You have some real areas, hard pan areas in the rough where you're hitting off just dirt or just little clumps of grass. You know, that makes it difficult to play the game. And I think it's one thing when, you know, when you watch golf on TV and they play it down and the rough is thick, it's designed that way. You know, if you hit it in the rough, it's, but it's consistent. Obviously courses we play around here, it's not consistent. They, most of these courses don't have the manpower, the money to, you know, handle the type of weather we've had. It's not a shot at those golf courses. I mean, we've had some really tough weather this summer, but, so that's tough because you're asking kids to play golf off of lies that it wasn't intended to be played off of. Now, the flip side of that is how else do you do it? Because if you say, okay, we're going to roll the ball everywhere, well, now you get into some shady things because kids, you know, how far can you roll the ball? How much can, you know, it's the length of a scorecard. Okay, well, I'm behind a tree. All of a sudden, that length of a scorecard becomes two scorecards, so I can get it out here and punch it out, you know.
Right.
You run the risk there of, you know, there being players maybe trying to take advantage of that a little bit. And, you know, golf's a game where you're supposed to police yourself, and I think most kids do, but also the rules are there for a reason. So I can see both sides of it, I guess.
Well, I know that maybe sounds like this year we've been a little tough on the league, and by no means are we trying to do that. I think in fairness to the league, as we've come to an end, I think it's important to understand that this league's very young. They have played some tough conditions in terms of weather, especially over the last three rounds, some tough courses. Looking at the projected all-league standings individually, it looks like we're going to have about 90% of our all-league team back next year, plus some of the junior high players I'm seeing. You can go on the site and get those junior high scores from there. Five SVC matches as well. A couple nice players I've noticed coming up. Some consistent scores from Piketon and Adina, two schools that jump out at me there. So you'll want to definitely check that out. I think there's some good things in SVC golf to come. And, well, fans, please stay with us. On the other side of the break, we continue with what was a busy week in the inbox, and our next email jump starts our football discussion this week. Well, Matt, as I get into the inbox and I start thinking football, there's a great one here that's really been an ongoing discussion in a lot of different media markets here of late. This one is saying, I was talking, almost arguing with some friends the other day about the spread offense. Again, talking about the spread offense in football. Then I heard the scoreboard show talking about it Friday night, and then some of the guys on the Big Ten Network Saturday talking about it. Help my friends and me with this debate. What do you guys think of this offense? Like it? Don't like it? Why? Well, this is a great topic, and it is something that's definitely a part of the modern day game in terms of a lot of people using versions of the spread and looking to really spread people out and get athletes in space. And I guess the first thing I like about it is it's fun. I mean, you know, as a fan, as a kid, an athlete, if you're getting involved in football, it's definitely fun to watch. It's kind of like the pressing team in basketball and sports becoming bigger, faster, stronger. I think a lot of it, you could say that those are a lot of things you like about it. From a strategy standpoint, I know you get some different athletes in space, and I know, Matt, you've talked about how tough tackling is and things like that, and I think rules favor offense. I think you're seeing that more and more when a wide receiver goes out into a route and the different things that person's allowed to do compared to the defense. I think the rules favor offense, and I guess a couple of my dislikes would be the short yardage situations, especially in the red zone or down on the goal line. I'm not a big fan of the spread there. I've seen a lot of teams really have trouble when their spacing is condensed, being able to execute it at a high level. But, Matt, I'll throw this at you. And I guess that first, before you go, Matt, I should let fans know that we had done a show on this last year. And, fans, you can go back the DBK Media Service website. Just go to our homepage. You'll see the big DBK logo. Go back to last year's show and scroll down, hit the SVC Sports Talk over on the right side, and you'll see a list of all the shows we've ever had in our 2-year history. And you'll just look at the descriptions, and you'll see we had defensive coordinator Ed Yates on, if I remember correctly, talking about a defensive perspective, and a couple other people that are really well known in the high school game for the spread. So that was a really interesting show that kind of goes on this topic. But Matt, when you think likes, dislikes, how would you respond to some of mine and maybe some of your thoughts as well?
Well, As a fan, I really enjoy watching teams run a quick pace, whether it be a spread offense or, you know, just wide open kind of attack where maybe they're going no huddle a lot, stuff like that. I'm not a football expert, but I know I'm just a fan. But as a fan, I enjoy watching that. You know, I mean, obviously I'm an Ohio State fan. I enjoy watching Ohio State regardless of how they play because that's my team. You know, now Ohio State's moving toward a little bit more of a quick pace offense under Coach Meyer. But you know, I'd watch them no matter what. But teams that run this spread or teams that run some sort of quick paced offense, you know, I'll flip those guys on and watch them late on a Saturday night. I'll watch an Oregon play, or I'll watch, you know, I can't think of another example off the top of my head, but you know what I mean? Watching one of those teams, you know, and not that I'm a fan of them, but it's just fun football to watch. I mean, if I turn, you know, I'm not going to watch a game of some team that runs kind of a dinosaur, 3 yards in a cloud of dust type of offense. I wouldn't watch them if they're playing in my backyard, unless I'm a fan of the team. But, you know, I'll flip on a game where it's entertaining to watch. So as a fan, I like it. I think if you probably talk to football coaches, they could dissect this better and tell you the good and bad parts of it. I know, you know, at the high school level, that you probably have to have a certain type of team to be able to do that. Some people argue that it hurts your defense a little bit because you have a lot of, you know, three and outs that don't take very much time, and your defense is right back on the field. I know there's been some discussion with Ohio State this year, you know, not being as good defensively, and maybe it's the offense's fault a little bit by putting them on the field in some situations. But I think you have to change with the times a little bit, and this is the way football is going. Like you said, the rules favor the offense, and that this is sort of the way the game's flowing right now. And trying to get one-on-one matchups out in the open field, that's just kind of the way the game is. So, you know, you have to kind of roll with it, but I think it's fun to watch.
Matt, we'd also had another interesting discussion going on throughout the last couple of weeks where we were talking about overlooked skills or stats or fundamentals in sports. And we had some track people talk about the field events, and we had some different people in basketball talking about the free throw shooting and different things like that. One of the things that came into me this week was baseball. They were talking about how the batting average is obviously important, but an overlooked stat would be hitting with runners in scoring position. And when reading that email, and then right after that, reading this football email, it got me thinking, one of the overlooked things in football that has a lot to do with the modern day game, I think, is your secondary defensively catching the ball. I think you're going to give up a lot of completions. I mean, offenses nowadays are throwing it 45, 50, 55 times, maybe, instead of the 25, 30, 35 times. So you're obviously going to have more passing yards. But defenses, even if they're giving up more points, they're going to have 2-3 times in a game where they have the opportunity to make a game-changing play where they steal a possession. And I see just a lot of secondary, especially in high school, because we have 3-4 teams in our league that run this. And I see a lot of defenses with an opportunity to change the game, and you'll have a drop in the secondary. That's something that really jumps out at me. And Matt, I kind of wanted to get your take. I want you to kind of put your coaching hat on here. Whatever the sport might be, do you as a coach sometimes evaluate performance in certain parts of the game differently? You know, like when you think of hitting with runners in scoring position or making a game-changing play defensively, you know, or are you one of those guys that just believe that all 32 minutes of the basketball game is important and it's all equal, or do you put a little bit more stock of a kid being able to make some plays in a key stretch?
Well, I think you have to put a little more stock into that, because kids performing under pressure late in the fourth quarter, that's going to be big for you at certain points during the season. Obviously, you're going to have close games, so you need to know who those kids are and who you might be able to turn to in a certain situation, which kids handle that pressure a little bit better than others. You know what I mean? So you have to I think as a coach, you have to look at that. But obviously, the whole game's important, but you have to view some of those things. I think, you know, from a skill standpoint, looking at a couple different sports, I think in basketball, one of the skills that has gotten lost over the last several years is players offensively being able to have what we refer to as a mid-range game.
Sure.
You see a lot of high school kids now that shoot the three well. You'll see a lot of kids that can drive it all the way to the hole. You'll see some post kids that can catch it and score inside. But if you really put, you think about it, get out a piece of paper sometime, if you're a big basketball fan in your league, and write down how many kids in your league can take the ball on their own, make a move, and pull up and hit 15-foot jump shots consistently. You know, because that's a part of the game that I think, for whatever reason, and I'm not so sure I even know the reason, maybe you have an opinion, Shane, has gotten lost over the years. And you see it at every level. You see college kids that don't do it as well now, too.
Sure.
And the ones that can, they're players. You know, in college, the ones that can, you hear people talking about, man, this kid can score here, here, here. You know, so that's been a big skill that has been lost. I think baseball, base running, I think, is a little bit of something that gets overlooked.
Sure.
You know, you have people don't pay enough attention. Like, a kid doesn't score from second on a hit, or a kid doesn't go first to third, and you're just thinking, okay, he couldn't make it. Well, he could have made it. He didn't get a very good secondary lead. He didn't get a good jump, whatever the case may be. You know, so those are little things that I think can make a difference that maybe aren't as, I don't know, aren't as paid attention to, so to speak, as some other things. And like you say, there are stats. There are stats that can be a little bit deceiving. You know, you'll see teams, especially in basketball, well, we hold our opponent to 38 points a night. You know, and then you look over here and they only score 42 points a night. So is their defense really good, or their just pace of play is good? I mean, they're good offensively. They handle the ball. They run a lot of clock. You know,
sure,
they play
I think
a slow game.
I think you can make the same thing with the football spread offense there too. Snaps per game. That's a good point, yeah.
Or vice versa. This team gives up in basketball. They're giving up 60 points a game. Well, but are they playing fast? Are they up and down? Are they scoring 80 points a game? Are they putting pressure on you with their mm-hmm. offense? You know what I mean? Is their best defense their offense, because you can't score enough to beat them?
Right.
You know, so there's all kinds of, we could discuss this for a long time, but there's all kinds of those little things, you know, to be considered when you're looking at stats or skills that might be overlooked.
Well, sure, and that's another ongoing topic, and fans, we want to encourage you to keep bringing in those ideas. I thought that was a really good batting average email that I received this week that kind of generated some discussion there. And, you know, when we look football this past Friday night, you can check out the website for all the details. Westfall and Paint Valley roll. Those two teams are going to meet, and we talk rivalries. That, again, is a little bit of a renewed rivalry with both of those teams in the title hunt here, and the spread offense we just talked about against the running attack. I know Westfall's defense got it going this past weekend. Klein gets the strip fumble and takes them for the score, and the offense really never looked back with Williamson hitting C and Staten and Thomas on some big pass plays. And then, like I said, the Paint Valley run attack, I'm sure, is going to try to keep Williamson on the sideline. I know Kyle Cottonbrook, Anthony McFadden, Mark Clifford, and Quentin Tessie all rushed, but I think it was between 60 and 120, so Paint Valley really doing a job on the ground there. So should be a good matchup. And then the other two games this past Friday night, I know Zane Trace, Adina, and then Huntington, Piketon, somewhat deceiving final scores. I know we've been getting some great shouts. I appreciate all the people around the area that helped keep me updated at all the games on Friday night. I know Zane Trace up 14-13 on Adina. I believe the text that I ended up receiving said 52 seconds to go in the half, and before you know it, Adina returns a kick, stills the momentum, goes up, and then never looks back in the second half. I know Piketon, Huntington, a great game. They enter the fourth quarter, 19-13 Piketon. Huntington is 1 yard in a PAT away from going up 20-19, and on three straight plays to start the fourth quarter, unable to get it in from a yard out. Piketon takes the ball, creates a little room on the first down play, and then in that position, it looks like maybe Huntington's going to get a chance to make Piketon punt out of their end zone. Coach Gallion makes a real nice call on a little end around. I believe it was Ferguson. I apologize if I have the wrong name there. I believe it was Ferguson. Takes off about 50 yards all the way out to midfield, and Piketon goes on down the score 27-13 and then never looks back. But on that goal line stand, Matt, I was thinking of one thing you'd said on a previous show. I know earlier in the year when you saw Piketon, you were real impressed with their defensive line, were you not?
Oh, yeah. I thought they had some real big kids up there and some guys that moved well. And, you know, I think Piketon gets a lot of credit for their offense because they have a nice offensive group. But I think their defense gets overlooked a little bit. I know Westfall lit them up pretty well. But outside of that,
I think defense, Westfall lights up quite a few
people. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, that's, you know, you might just have to overlook that one. Who don't they light up? You know, they've played really well other than the last minute or two of the Minford game, which I think, if I remember correctly, listening to Coach Gallion, he didn't put that completely on his defense. There were some field position things there happening, and the offense couldn't execute.
Onside kick involved there too, I think.
Right. So, but their defense has gotten overlooked a little bit. They really, I think, have a pretty solid defensive group, and Holt Huntington, you know, who's been really putting some points on the board, is pretty impressive performance.
Well, Matt, to continue our football discussion, let's look at our CNK Athletic Equipment two-minute drill. And fans, our two-minute drill, throughout the year we take a few questions every week to take on some rapid-fire questioning. This week we mix it up. So, Matt, on that note, let's take a look back at week five, a look ahead to week six, as well as a few other football topics.
In looking at the Good Health Chiropractic SVC football scoreboard for week five, what is the one thing that jumps out at you?
Well, I think, you know, a couple things here. We've had exciting games in the SVC. You know, it just seems like week to week we're not sure who's going to beat who. But the one thing that jumps out a little bit at me was the Zane Trace Adina game. You know, Zane Trace is kind of an enigma a little bit to me right now because they started the year rough, playing some really good non-league opponents. They get a good win against Greenfield, and they turn right around and beat a good Paint Valley team. And it looks like they're rolling a little bit, and then they get knocked off here by an Adina team that struggled a little bit. So, you know, it's that game jumped out at me a little bit. It's going to be interesting to see how Zane Trace bounces back.
Matt, as I look at the scoreboard, it really caught my attention how many defensive and special team touchdowns are taking place. There's a lot of scoring involved there, be it kickoff returns, interception. We had the big fumble. I know Klein of Westfall with the fumble the other night. Chaney and Waddell in the Huntington-Piketon game. I think that was the second straight week for Chaney to score. I think Bothman was involved in one Southeastern. So just a lot of different things I see defense and special teams getting involved in the scoring.
Which defensive unit was most impressive in week five?
Well, I'm going to jump back to what we were talking about a minute ago. I've got to say Piketon. You know, Huntington scoring a ton of points, seems like every week. And then Piketon holds them scoreless, if I'm correct, in the whole second half, I believe. So, you know, Piketon holds Huntington scoreless the whole second half. They end up taking a close game and making it not so close at the end. And anytime you can hold that offense to 13 points, I think you've done something really good.
Well, I can't disagree with you there, Matt. I'm going to go with Westfall. Obviously, we give the offense an incredible amount of attention, and it's well deserved. But here's a team in a 34-2 win. Obviously, keeps Uniota out of the end zone and even creates the first score of the game. And obviously, when you're trying to stay in the game with a Westfall team, it's going to be hard enough to limit their offense. You start giving up special team and defensive scores, and they almost become unbeatable.
And looking at the embrace. Me schedule for week six. What matchup are you most intrigued by and why?
Well, I like the Piketon Zane Trace matchup. I think, you know, Piketon, it's two contrasting styles. Obviously, Piketon plays a little more wide open offense, Zane Trace a little more power team. And it's going to be interesting to see how both teams mentally come into this game. You know, I talked earlier, Zane Trace, they've had some you know, they had a couple good wins there, and now they come off of maybe a disappointing loss. How are they going to bounce back? Piketon had a couple tough weeks there, back-to-back. They bounce back with a win. How are they going to handle that? So I just think there's a lot going into that game, and it'll be interesting to see which style of play wins out.
Matt, I honestly couldn't find a bad matchup this week. I think it's a great week. We talked Westfall, Paint Valley renewing a little bit of a rivalry with the spread offense versus the running game, as both of those teams are in the title hunt. And the Edina Southeastern has a little subplot there with Coach Coy. That's always exciting going back against your old school. And just from a football perspective, Huntington-Uniota, I think, is a great matchup. Last year, I know Uniota kind of lined up and was able to run it right down their throat. And you're anxious to see if Huntington defensive line is going to give them a chance to be competitive in that game. So I really can't come up with a bad matchup. I think it's going to be a fun week for SVC fans.
In an attempt to give an unknown player some much-deserved attention, which player in this year's SVC is quietly having a great year?
Well, this is kind of a tough one because, you know, it's hard to really determine who's an unknown player, you know, when right. You start looking at different teams. But obviously a lot of the better teams in the league catch a lot of attention because that's the way it is. But the Bothman kid from Southeastern, I noticed the last couple weeks he's done some great things. I think he had like a 75-yard kickoff return last week for a touchdown against Paint Valley. And then the week before, if I'm not mistaken, I believe he scored a touchdown in that game as well, or had a big play. The last couple of weeks I've been like just listening to the scoreboard show, reading the paper. His name's jumped out at me on a team that's obviously young and rebuilding, but he's doing some great things.
Well, Matt, I think that's a really good one. I think a kid from Paint Valley, Kyle Cottonbrook's having a nice year statistically. Don't know much about exactly what he's doing, but I know he's really had some big yardage games running for the Bearcats. I would even maybe throw in a Cameron Waddell from Piketon. I know the other night in the Huntington game, an interception and a fumble on the defensive side. Also scores a couple on the ground, as well as a kickoff return there. So those are a couple kids that jump out at me. Fans, make sure you see all of our sports roundups. You'll want to take a look over on the left side of the homepage. Soccer, I know Uniota boys stay undefeated at this point in the year. Cross country, we had kids involved in the Lancaster Invite and a couple schools down at Rio Grande. Jesse Prohl, Zane Trace, a huge win for Zane Trace at Lancaster. Zane Trace girls, Uniota boys finished third in that really big meet. We also have our Pick'ems contest going on. We have our SVC Streaks page. And then don't forget about our Herbie Strange Athlete of the Week. We get several votes every week. That's something that's really, really grown on our website. Had a Sherman sweep this past week with Vanderpool from his incredible performance a couple weeks back. And then Lexi Overly, where she had a big game in the win over Edina. So getting ready to name our new winners here in the next day or two for this past week. But definitely get those into the inbox to place your votes. Fans, on the other side of the break, we turn our attention to volleyball. We talk about a race that was believed to be a logjam, but one team seems completely against a close race for the title. Volleyball fans, we're in a little bit of a transition week, if you will. Zane Trace still perfect, 13-0 overall, 8-0. 8-0 makes them six shy of gold. And this is going to be a huge week. We've talked a lot of volleyball last week, and we'll probably be prepared to talk a lot next week as Zane Trace will see Westfall and Uniota visit Kenny Connick this week. And it's going to be all about the home court this second half of the season for Zane Trace. And good to see the radio doing volleyball games. I know they've started doing that here more and more. It's just good for the growth of the game. I know one of our website goals has always been to promote sports and get more coverage. So anytime you see radio picking up these other sports, that's a great thing for our league. And then everyone chasing. As I said, I know Huntington and Dina play a big match. So if you go back with last week's show, we've had a lot of volleyball talk. And as we move forward, I'm sure that we're going to have the same. I know Southeastern, Paint Valley, Piketon really showing some improvement. And it's always interesting to see when they go out of the league, the non-league success they have. It just really shows you how good SVC volleyball is. So, fans, we have talked a lot of volleyball in the past few weeks with interviews and so forth. And down the stretch, our volleyball sections will be a big part of our shows in the weeks to come. For now, we turn our attention back to the inbox as well as a Facebook comment as we examine and parents refereeing games that their kids are playing in, best classes in SVC history, and another opportunity for me to improve the great game of volleyball. Well, Matt, I know it seems like we've slided volleyball there a little bit, but we've been talking volleyball in so many aspects, and in our last trip to the inbox as well as one Facebook message kind of continues to bring volleyball into the discussion. The one inbox is interesting. This is about the fourth or fifth different person in the last year, going all the way back to the last winter and spring sports, that has mentioned this particular class. It says, I know that there have been some impressive classes in the SVCs throughout the years. However, the current sophomore class, which would be our 2015 graduates, for girls sports is pretty impressive in their own right. It seems that numerous of them played and made significant contributions in all sports as freshmen. This trend has continued in their sophomore season, with many of them being key players in fall sports. Do you think this class of young ladies may be the most talented overall girls class to come through the SVC? And I guess, Matt, when I read this particular email, this is a really tough one, because you start looking, are you talking about the entire class per school? Are you talking about just individuals that represent this class throughout the league? And when we get this, and this probably isn't where the email was wanting me to go, but I tend to get back on my soapbox a little bit with the way Little League's set up now, and then we get the AAU and a little bit of the club volleyball stuff going on, and we get some transferring going on, which, again, in an upcoming show, we're really going to talk transfer, and we continue to get a lot of comments every weekend on that. I guess it's just hard to say. I've tried to look back through history, 91, 92, 95 boys, early 02, 03, maybe even 08 boys. As far as girls, I know late 80s, there was some impressive one, mid 90s with some of the ones I'd come up with. But it was just really hard to narrow down the search in terms of what you're looking for. And I guess, Matt, I was wanting to get your take when you hear the email and some of the thoughts I was having. What would be your thoughts to this?
Well, I think when you start, it's tough, like you say, to compare classes over time, and so many things go into that. But the one thing I'd probably say to this email is, let's wait and see. You know, I mean, I don't know. To me, when you start talking about a great class, it should be a great graduating class. I think it's awful tough to talk about a class when they're in the 10th grade or whatever, 9th or 10th grade. So let's see how it pans out. You know, let's see where they're at when they're actually seniors, what they've led their team to over the 4 years. And then I think we can talk about this a little bit more accurately. But it's tough to talk about classes when they haven't proven themselves over time yet.
I think you make a good point there, and I think a lot of it has to do with opportunities. So we'll definitely be following this class. As the email says, they're obviously everywhere on the volleyball court. Softball was a huge impact last year, so it's definitely something we will follow. I'm sure this will not be the last time we talk about this topic. Fans, Matt and I always enjoy hearing from you. Keep in mind that we do a lot of our discussion with people on SEO Preps, SEO NEK Preps, and of course, JJ Huddle, who's been a big supporter of what we do here at SVCSportsZone.com. And, you know, Matt, even though we're getting a little later into the night, I thought one of the best things we'd received all week in terms of a topic, you know, I'm sure is going to generate an opinion with everybody, regardless of your favorite sport or your school or whatever, comes to me in Facebook this week. It says, what are your feelings on parents refereeing their child's team's games? Not coaching, but refereeing. I would be curious as yours and your listeners' opinions as to whether this should be permitted and why or why not. There is a lot to our story, but I don't want to basically saying they don't want to influence anyone's opinion, you know, until the discussion started. So this person thought SVC Sports Talk would be a great place to generate this discussion. And I guess my first reaction to this, Matt, is, you know, when I think of the level, sometimes at the little league level, you can't help this. Even junior high, in some real, real rare instances, I know from being a junior high AD, you get in situations where you don't want certain games to be canceled. But at the high school, it's just not a very good idea. I think if hired officials should do a good job of not even letting themselves get involved in that. But I will go back to my volleyball. I know it feels like I'm picking on volleyball tonight, but, you know, like line judges, for example. You know, I've been to some really great games over the last couple of years, and you'll get a close call down on the line. It could be a parent, a high school kid, whatever, and their in-out calls the difference in one team winning a set or losing a set. So this is definitely a great topic. I think it's something that if the parent as the adult is doing a good job, they should probably just avoid it altogether, and we wouldn't even be having this discussion. What do you say, Matt?
Well, I agree with that. Obviously, I think if you're professional, and the level does matter, I agree with that, you know, but especially let's say at the high school level, if as an official you're a you want to approach things in a professional manner, then you're not going to do that. You're not going to take a game, obviously, your kid's playing, and that's just ridiculous. You know, evidently it happens out there. I've seen a couple instances of it in JV. Nothing jumps to mind in terms of a parent actually doing their son or daughter's game at the varsity level. Although, you know, I've seen some odd situations. There was I was involved in a tournament game a few years ago where a crew did our tournament game, and the high school we were playing had a kid playing on it whose dad normally worked on that crew. So in other words, this crew had been together for many, many years. Obviously, they're probably buddies. You know, they've worked together for a long time. The dad didn't do the game, but here, you know, all his friends are doing the game of his son, you know, in a tournament game. So, and I had talked to a couple officials I have a lot of respect for privately, kind of asked their opinion, and they thought that probably wasn't a good idea, you know, in those situations. And I've seen people do it before where an official will work with a coach, maybe teaches with him or something, or is just friends with him. And if he gets assigned to his tournament game, he'll go to that tournament manager and say, listen, there's a conflict of interest here. I can't do this game. I wouldn't feel right about it. And that's the professional thing to do. And any tournament manager or assigner that with an ounce of professionalism in them would understand that, you know, and say, don't worry about it. We'll switch you. We'll trade you off. It's just obviously, you know, not a great idea. And I think the other people to blame in this is athletic administrators. Because, you know, I've went to a lot of places where these teams will hire JV officials when they know their kid's playing a game, or they know, you know what I mean? Sure. So as an athletic administrator, it's your job too, not to put people in that situation. I think just use some common sense. You know, this emailer wasn't specific about what level we're talking about here, but let's hope and pray it wasn't, you know, the varsity level or the high school level, let alone the varsity level. You know, there's just no room for that.
Well, I think, you know, I was always taught as an athletic director when I was getting into it, one thing Dave Shoemaker taught me at Paint Valley was, you know, you don't want to take your even your junior high schedule and just offer the first two officials that come every single home game. You know what I'm saying? Because you don't want to be known as here's the two officials you're going to have at Paint Valley. I'm just using that because that's where I work. But, you know, I do think there's something to go back to this line judge thing in volleyball. I mean, you're talking at the varsity level. You're talking just any two people they pull from the stands some nights and hand them a flag. Now, I assume, Matt, from an athletic director standpoint, I'm guessing that's just a money issue. There's really no way to solve that. Is that true?
Well, it is. I mean, you know, you're talking about what you'd have to hire two more people at whatever you pay them, which anymore, I think a lot of schools are for JV varsity are paying, you know, between $70 and $100, I think, you know, and some schools aren't paying that much. But when you start talking about hiring two more people, I think most athletic departments will tell you they can't handle that right now. I don't know enough about volleyball, and I certainly know even less about officiating volleyball. I don't know whether the answer is let the guy on the ladder do the best he can at making that call. The deep call, I guess, you know what I mean? The one that's out or in on the back line. And then hopefully he and or she and the referee on the other side can make the down the line calls. I guess as a coach, I don't know how other coaches feel about it, but if I were to coach volleyball, I could live with an official on the ladder missing a call a lot more than I could live with, I wonder if that call was manipulated by somebody who was rooting for one team. You see what I'm saying? I can handle an official missing a call more than I can handle the thought that there might have been something else involved.
No doubt about it. Now, I know from the volleyball I've learned here in the last several years, I know that would be an awfully lot to ask of that person with the different net violations and tips and the different things. But this is a great discussion. Hopefully we get a little feedback on Facebook from this person, as well as I'm sure the inbox is going to be filled with this. And if this person's okay with me sharing it out on Facebook, I will do that and we'll generate some discussion there. So I'm sure this will not be the last time. Out of all the stuff, we've had a great show this week. Out of all the stuff you've heard, it's being generated through our inbox at admin1@svcsportzone.com. We're on Facebook, as I said, two ways, svcsportzone.com, just like us, or you can just be my friend, Shane Combs, SVC Sports Zone. And then on Twitter as well. DBK Media Services also offers a phone number, 569-3254. That's a 740 number. Let us know by voice what you think, and we'll play you right here on the show, and we'll respond to it and let other people do the same. So with all of that in mind, until next time, for the great people at Triple Crown Family Fun Center, for DBK Media Services, and for my co-host, Mac Holmes, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting svcsportzone.com, where we are 100% SVC 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.